Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, your favorite food podcast, and I'm your host, Carl Fiadini. We're podcasting on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive. On the menu today, we have a Creekstone Farm Prime Porterhouse. This thing is like massive. It's like a cinder block. My God, oh goodness. We're also doing a High Plains Bison Ribeye. Plus, Mr. Chef Jefferson whipped up some pretty amazing desserts. You're going to want to hang in there and hear all about them. Thank you, Peninsula Food Service, for supplying the proteins for today's production. Our guest today is an incredibly talented friend of mine. His dishes are stunning. Stay tuned for Jason F. Lynn, CEC, and the new executive chef at the Grand Bohemian Hotel in downtown Orlando, Jefferson Schlissel. Jefferson, the starship, Schlissel. Jump into some pre-shift. Explain what's on the menu today. What's up,
my bro? Not much, man. That porterhouse was...
It's like a brick.
32 ounces. I felt like it was the John Candy episode of the 96er.
I love it. Listen. So... Normally we cook all the food, then jump into the cast. We have some time constraints today.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't jump into that ribeye yet, but I got to tell you, what we've had so far on that porterhouse, stupid.
Thank you.
Stupid good, man.
Thank you.
You know, if this number one podcasting doesn't work out, you should go back to the kitchen.
Possibly, yeah. Right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I wanted to do it, every function that we do, we want to do it two ways. So we did the porterhouse. And the porterhouse, just so everyone knows, the difference between a porterhouse and a T-bone is just minute. It's maybe some of the cut and how much of the... So you get the two best both worlds. You get a New York strip on one side, you get a filet on the other, or beef tenderloin on the other. Porterhouse is just a lot more of it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So porterhouse is like something, it's like somebody like me, a fat fatty, would go and order because I'm going to eat everything.
Well, I told you there's a place down in Alton Road, Villa Meina, It's off of right near the Yardbird, actually. Mm-hmm. And he's from Bologna, Italy. When Bourdain was still alive, he got rated the best pasta Bourdain has ever made in the really? World that he's eaten. Yeah. And he would have $100 porterhouse on his menu, and he would sell about a case a week. And then one guy would come in, there was like 96 ounces. Mm. And this one guy once a week would come in there, and that's all he'd eat.
But he wouldn't eat for the rest of the week.
He's not like you.
He was like a rodent. He was like a reptile, right? Like you have one big meal, like
an anaconda, and I don't need to eat for a week.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, that's all right. So, but jump into what you made today. It looks really pretty. Yeah.
Well, he does. John does, and as I pointed to my left, John does a great, phenomenal job taking.
He's okay.
This art.
He's all right. No, yeah. John's awesome.
But so we did this smoked on his Daniel Boone. And so it's got that hint of smoke.
Wait. Say that again. What?
Daniel Boone.
Yeah, Daniel Boone.
Green Mountain smoker.
Yeah.
So we brought it up to 450 degrees. We seared it bone side first, and then we did flipping it, and then we had some spices on there. And then I took a cherry jam. We kind of torched that to line that up. And then I wanted to treat it like you're going to a really nice steakhouse. So we did diced vegetables, but it's getting a little cooler.
Yeah.
Like the last couple of days here in Sefner and Bartow and Fishhawk, it was like 52 degrees in the morning. So it's like root vegetables, parsnips, carrots, rutabaga, and turnips. So I kind of roasted all those together, little grilled smoked asparagus on the side plates, seared mushrooms. Then we presented that. We then did I paid homage to Tzimis, which growing up as a Jewish kid, hated Tzimis.
Is that the USS?
Yeah, right. No? Okay. Minutes. No? So this is a very over-the-top sweet on top of sweet. It was carrots and sweet potatoes and prunes. And it was like, you know, growing up at a 7-6-year-old kid looking at that stuff going, prunes? I'm kind of regular.
This did not look.
No.
This didn't look like, you know, your mama's or your grandmama's sort of, traditional sort of food.
And this was one up too, because we did the sourdough. So I've been looking for a really good sourdough, and I said, screw this. I can't wait for Amy.
Yeah, we're going to wait for Amy. Right? We have her on a schedule too, by the way.
I saw that.
Yeah, she's coming up.
So I did the sourdough, did it, grew it for 6 days, did the sourdough, cooked this thing as a tartine open-faced with Stokes purple sweet potato, had a little vanilla to that. The sweet potato that I was using was orange. That had some chipotle and some warming spices. The carrot I just roasted with some steak seasoning. And then took that porterhouse, sliced that down, and put it on top with some chives. And the smoked prunes, next level.
They were really good. I will tell you this. The carrot puree. I mean.
Sweet potato puree. What? Or the carrot puree. Which one?
Both.
Today?
Today.
That was carrot. I mean, sorry. That was carrot roasted and sweet potato puree.
The orange one in puree form. It looked like.
Sweet potato.
Yeah. Like you can make a pie out of that.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like a mousse. Yeah, definitely 100%.
Right.
But this is like paying homage to my heritage. Hold on.
A lot of people are mad at you. They're mad at you. We promised.
Chimichurri.
No.
The recipes.
What do you? No.
What?
Come in. Get out of here. No, what I'm saying is last week or the week before, whenever, recently, we said there would be recipes and there hasn't been any recipes and people are pissed.
Okay? You're the only one.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm telling you that there's a wave of people who are
tsunami
like.
Tsunami or?
A tsunami. Yeah, if you will. They're looking for more and we're not giving it to them. And you know what, man? That is resting squarely on your shoulders.
There's not just my shoulders. There's to my left shoulders. Oh, he has to post it.
Oh, look at this. Look at this. You see what he does? John is like, E2 Brutai. Like, wow, look at this. Look at this.
Ready for this one?
Wow.
If we had better organization from somebody, it would tell us.
Whoa.
What
to, oh, my
God. You dropped that in our lap.
Wait a minute. Wow.
Look at the smirk onto your right there.
Yeah, John's like, screw both of you guys. Screw you guys. I'm going home. You know, he's like, well, I am home. All right, forget it. All right, so I do want to get these recipe things going.
We'll definitely get that.
John, is that going to be on the blog? What is that?
As soon as he gets it, he said.
Yeah, but is that going to be a blog thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have to do another blog.
And our producer has a perfectly working microphone, but he decides that he just wants to shake his head. Yes, no, whatever, you know, whatever.
He doesn't like to talk. Oh, he's an introvert.
He is. It's true. It's a true story. I've known a guy 35 years. He's definitely accurate.
He just started talking recently to me.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. All right.
He's like Silent Bob talking about Jay Gardner from last week. We have our own version of him.
Silent John. Is that his new name? I think that's the new name. Silent John.
He's going to kill you in a second.
He is, but that's what it is. Wait, hey, listen, when you get into like one of these podcasts or, you know, some sort of a thing like this, some content that you're on every week or whatever, you have to have these little tag names or these little pet names, like amongst the group or whatever.
Like Jefferson?
Like Jefferson. Yeah, like Jefferson, exactly.
Yep, Starship.
Yeah. I mean, listen, but when we're putting stuff in descriptions or we're putting content out, it's always Chef Jeffrey Schlissel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but on the show, it's Jefferson, Starship, you know, whatever.
I feel what you're dishing.
I know you are. You're smelling what I'm stepping in. Mm-hmm. Okay, so... without further ado, let's get the chef Jason F. Lynn CEC and the new executive chef.
Do you know what CEC means?
Of the Grand Bohemian Hotel in Orlando.
He doesn't know.
I'm doing an intro here. Certified executive. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. He does know. CEC.
The people can't see this.
You're number one?
Yes, you are. We're all number one, but you more. Okay. Welcome.
Thank you.
To the we've been talking about doing some stuff together for 2 years.
Yeah, at least.
Right?
Yep, definitely.
Had to be.
Yep.
Yeah. And finally. Oh, and by the way, let me just back up a bit. Not only is Chef Jason here today for the podcast, and obviously, and congratulations on the spot over there, man. That's a beautiful hotel.
Yep, definitely.
And you can talk about some of the renovations in a minute, but
yep.
Chef Jason is, in fact, our newest member of our Restaurant Recipes culinary, partner team. Watch out.
Yep.
This guy's food is amazing. I'm talking about like it's beautiful. It pops. And it's tasty. So coming soon, Restaurant Recipes with Chef Jason F. Lynn. All right. Quick, real fast, background, go.
Background, born
too,
up
too
north.
Slow, too slow.
Came to
no,
South
kidding.
Florida. Just kidding. Came to South Florida, fell into a dish pit at a beautiful Jewish delicatessen. They taught me everything foundational, soup, stock, sauces, and then boom, boom, boom. Came into, line cook, prep cook, line cook, sous chef. You know, you get those couple KM jobs in there where they're kind of taking advantage of you. And then eventually you start becoming an executive chef. And
they take advantage of them more.
They take advantage. Yeah, well, sometimes. But education, Florida Culinary Institute down in West Palm back in the day. And then, yes, I went after CEC with the ACF just to really prove it to myself. I remember seeing a lot of gentlemen come in to take that test at culinary school and was like, I'll never be that good. But anywho, I said, forget that. And I went after that. And and even currently with the certified master chef, assessment I went for. So I have dreams of grandeur or something wrong with me.
Or you're into sadism, masochism.
Well, that's the behind the scenes part. We're not supposed to talk about that part.
Well, yeah, but wait a minute. You know, the abuse of a KM, the poor KM, he's, like this, crossover position and,
Well, pay's not just the CMC exam. Yeah. You heard it was an assessment.
Yeah, the assessment was in depth. But so I just believe in continuing education, bettering myself, growing towards my future and all things culinary arts.
Yeah. I want to know. Well, first of all, and there was like, how many people in your group?
10 of us.
10.
Yep.
10 in, 10 out. Like everybody failed. No, I'm kidding. But this is going to be.
I think most of us probably felt like we failed just, transparency. But it was an assessment. It's almost like a grading.
It's almost like a boot camp sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right?
They whip you, they hit you, they scream at you. No. We don't do that anymore. But it was really an assessment, a grading
anymore.
Of our
anymore. what they should do.
Of our skill set.
What they really should do, like bring it back to the old school, is like line you up against the wall and throw six pans at you.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I can pass that test.
Yeah.
I think we all can. Yeah. Or the older ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Right.
So Lance actually listens to the Lance Cook, who was with you up there. He listens to the podcast.
Yeah,
so.
Great guy. Actually, I'll throw out the Chef Lance. You know, I was kind of intimidated to meet Chef Lance. I kind of looked at him as this kind of this god in culinary arts. And I met him and come to figure he's a man like you and I. And he was actually really cool. We kind of hit it off and became friends. And he's actually coming to Orlando and we're trying to go out for dinner and hang out.
Let me get him on the show.
We can. He's just really busy. But Lance is one of those guys that is so competitive, but he also has that human heart, humanity behind him. And he's just a really, I mean, all around a really great guy.
Yep.
When you see him, he's got, it looks very military-like, right? Yep. He's got that staunch look. He's got that, you know, death stare. But when you, you see him smile and he, you know, it just lights up the room and just, he's just a really phenomenal individual.
You don't mess with people that do the 1,000-yard stare. You don't mess with them.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It's most chefs.
Yeah. Most chefs.
Oh, yeah. But I got to throw this one out about. So I was a little jealous. Couples. At the end of the CMC assessment, there was all these like young groupie chef females that came around Lance. They were like flocking him and having him sign this cutting board. So I was, they walk away. I'm like, Lance, you got groupies, man. Like, no one's asking me to sign a cutting board.
We can call them food groupies.
Yeah. Okay? Food groupies. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, cause back in about what, before COVID, Lance was actually looking to do it cause he was competing against one of, the members from the American Culinary Federation of Palm Beach, Joseph Waters, who was my first vice president. They became so close as competitors. They pushed themselves. And I think every time it was either Lance got gold and Joseph got gold. It was like one or the other.
Yep.
But then they were going to go to do the CMC together. And that's just huge because that is a really difficult test. Yeah. I don't care who you are, what you are, to get that, you know, label on your jacket. It's tremendous.
Yeah.
Hands down. Those guys that do it, Gerald Ford, Rich Rosendale, all those guys that have done it in the past, it's amazing. And then the newest one, which was Andy Chabela, I think is, I don't pronounce his name wrong. Sorry, Andy. That's the CMPC that did it in recently. Those guys, I mean, the wealth of knowledge they have is just mind blowing.
Definitely. Yeah.
I don't even know what to say. I mean, I feel like I'm sitting with greatness as it is just here.
Well, John and
yeah, Jack, not you. No.
Everyone other down. Than you, Carl.
Yeah.
No, Carl's got greatness. It's around his waist.
It's around my weight. I love how I'm the, whatever. For a laugh, fine. Okay. Grand Bohemian.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so prior to you arriving there, I have some experiences at that hotel and I love that property. What have they done though? I haven't been there probably in maybe a year and a half, 2 years maybe.
Yeah. So they've gone under a complete renovation. I mean, from the top of the hotel, interior wise, everything is basically completely new from the rooms, you know, new furnishings, new everything. I've been watching them bring in the new TVs, take out the old TVs. It's literally a in and out kind of thing.
So I went and Jeff, you weren't there that day, but I went and visited the property with Southern Provisions with Ryan, and I hadn't been there like I said in about 2 years. They redid the entire bar area, which is, I mean, they really did a great job.
The Bösendorfer Lounge,
beautiful. Like they took away that the horseshoe looking bar, circle bar there.
Yeah, the flow is much better now because that mirrored the ceiling, the tray ceiling above was the same round rotundra like shape.
Yeah.
So
what I'm saying, people, is get to Orlando, get to the Grand Bohemian. They're still working on some rooms, but like for the food factor, get there. They redid the main dining room.
Yeah, we have our private dining room, which we call the Peacock Room.
That room is freaking gorgeous.
Yeah, that's my favorite room.
I don't know who took that picture the other day that you posted.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, you did. Hey, John, watch your six, man. Watch your back.
That was with an Android phone.
Wow.
Well,
get out. No, I'm kidding. It's gorgeous. The table looks like it's a mirror. Everything is just, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
It's a great shot.
Yeah. Get out there, people.
Yeah.
My question to you is when they redid the hotel, did they redo the equipment in the kitchens?
Yeah, what they did is they made everything smaller and they ordered less equipment. So they took the I'm kidding.
Well,
we just sous vide everything now. You know?
Here's the problem. Like most,
we don't know what to do now. We had to get rid of all the water baths.
most hotels, they don't look at food and beverage the way it needs to be looked at. It's not.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of, I know from the private club world, I think kitchens tend to get a little bit more love where the chef can really sell the point of the kitchen. When you come into more of a little bit of the corporate business world and hotel world, it kind of can tend to be the end of it. But we are part of that renovation and we are continuing to start the renovation on the kitchen and working through that. So
Mazel tov.
Mazel tov, yeah, definitely.
That. Congratulations. Yeah, cheers. Yeah. I mean, look at, we were at the Don Cesar, right? We're in that one kitchen that we're in. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, oh, they're going to redo the other ones. I'm like, what about this? And we got that look. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I'm talking about. It's one of those things that's in the back of the mind.
Well, when you have a property that's 100 years old or whatever, you know, you don't have a lot of options either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that building. So the Don is probably one of my favorite hotels in the state. It's just gorgeous. Big, beautiful pink palace that they call it. Right on the sand. So it's right on the water. You can't beat it. It's like that, you know, it's that 1920s, you know, or yeah, 1920s look. Mm. You know what I mean? Who's that?
Oh, can I give a couple of props, a couple of shout outs?
Sure. No.
Yes. I have to give a shout out to Ben, the new GM. He definitely has, you know, bigger dreams for the property. So we're excited about that. And then my F&B director, Louisa, she's awesome. I'm lucky to have her on my team. And my backbone executive sous chef, definitely Chef Frank. He's the man. So
I think I may have met Frank before.
You've met Frank. Yeah.
It's been, like I said, it's been a long time.
He's a staple there.
Yeah. So, but you know, where did Ben come from?
Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Ben was with Kessler, and so he came from another property. So he's been with Kessler for some time. So
the parent company is called Kessler?
So, and I don't speak completely wrong on this, but we are under Marriott. So Kessler's under Marriott, and it's part of the Autograph Collection. So,
yeah, I mean, one day we'll get Ben on the show too. That'd be great. We don't tip. So usually we stick to the culinary side, but there's this whole other, component to food service and food and the whole thing. And that, you know,
like front of house people. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
First of all, they deserve it.
And when I'm kidding.
He's front of the house. That's why.
I'm more front of the house.
He's a traitor.
I am not. I am the bridge.
Remember, when you go from the back house to the front, you're a traitor for life. I always like to call people.
Well, he never went to the back.
No. Let me.
He picked up food up and ate.
Wait a minute. So I started in the front.
Okay.
And then they were like, they tried to bring me in. They tried. And I gave it an honest go, but I'm like, this is like a dungeon. I don't want to. It was punishment.
That's the best part.
No, not for it. I'm an extrovert. Oh. I need to be out.
Yeah.
You know? So for me, being in the back, here's your knife, here's the carrots, and have at it. I'm like, what am I punished? Like, this is like a, you know, my father is like, yeah, get in the back and cut these carrots.
It's like PT duty.
Yeah, forget it.
Peel those potatoes.
Exactly.
I need 50 pounds of onion to peel now. Yeah.
I was like, I need to be in the front. I want to be a star. You know what I mean? Like that. Yeah.
So that's why he started the podcast.
Yeah, true. Yeah. True story. Actually, it was all for John. It's John's photography.
John would be great in kitchens.
Look at the look.
It's for the photography factor. We wouldn't be. Let me tell you something. I said this, I don't know, an hour ago. We wouldn't have the success that we do have had it not be for the food that you're creating, right?
Thank you.
The photography that you're showing off what this guy makes.
Definitely.
And then we come and talk about it. And then, of course, we drizzle or, you know, we lace in.
Sprinkle.
Sprinkle in. I let the salt run down my
throat. Oh, don't do that. Not salt, babe.
Yeah, no.
No.
Get out of here. So, but the point is, without those components, I don't think we have the success that we have. Because if not, then we're just talking heads.
Just two different guys just talking about food, mm-hmm. and then bringing a third guy in or somebody else in to talk about it.
I mean, I think what you guys are doing for the industry or the community as a whole is really cool. Thanks, man. You're doing the proof in the pudding. I mean, you're showing what you do. You put it on different levels, and then you actually talk about what you just did. I mean, I just watched you produce that food, come here and talk about it. So there's no BS in it, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny because you only saw two dishes, and we started at 10.
Yeah.
So we got on
at, and I'm sure you were prepping 40? Half the day yesterday. Like you're working towards it.
Full day. Exactly. So, because I get phone calls.
Whatever. Hey, man, we got business to attend. It's not all just about.
No, it's not all poops and giggles. I know.
It would just be like the sous chef who's very talented but doesn't understand that there's a business to this whole thing. Do you know what I mean? That's what this is. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know there's a business.
Yeah. There's a business.
You know? Or else we're.
Business is getting your belly bigger.
Well, all right. Listen. You kind of hurt my feelings.
How? Really. You even call me today. I haven't eaten.
I saved it. Ready. I lost 3 pounds this week.
I mean, that's huge.
I'm going to gain it back today.
It's all protein anyway. You're good.
You know what I mean? Well, it's never all good protein. It's never. And then we have like some desserts today coming up too. Oh my God. Yeah. S'mores, sort of an offshoot on s'mores. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
I wish we can post the text string from John, me, and you.
No, we should never post those things. Never do that.
I'll show you offline, Chef. Don't worry about that one. You'll be part of that
way. But I will tell you this. So, Chef Jason, he's a culinarian. You know what I mean? Like he's gotten to a level in his career where he can look at things. So I respect, and I'm very happy. I'm thrilled, actually, that you said what you just said, you know, because you're a cat that number one, and you guys need to see the people listening in the audience. What's your best platform? Is it Instagram or
LinkedIn? Yeah, probably this time Instagram. Yeah.
What's your handle?
Chef J Lynn, like the letter J L Y N N, my last name, like the girl.
You need to see what he does. Because it's
you're getting a new follower right now.
Right
now,
nice. I left.
I'm up to like 310 right now. I'm blowing up.
Well, you're blowing up like we knew you would. Yeah, you know, call the same number, same hood. It's good.
It's always these beautiful women wanting to be friends with me on Instagram.
That's you're one of those Instagram.
I don't think they're real.
Infamous, infamous.
They want to sell you crypto.
They want to, right? So, but anyway, listen, the culinary that this cat puts out is stunning. It's beautiful looking stuff. So I do appreciate what you said. Thank you. So what's on the menu anyway? What a Granbo.
A Granbo. What's on the menu? We have our Boheme restaurant. So that has, great reviews, great ambiance with the new renovation. We went to all these
amateurs. How are we number one? Wait a minute. How the hell? Wait a second. Stop, Chef. Hold on. How on earth did we get to the number? Oh my God. Like amateurs, rank amateurs.
You know, we could have just said that was smoky and moved on, but you want to call it out. Don't you?
You're talking about my fatty fatness. So I'm going to bring that up. Yeah. What the F are we talking about here? What the Jason Athlin are we talking about here? All right. Back to the menu.
Yeah.
What are we looking at? What are we looking forward to? Have you gotten around to menus yet or no?
No. I mean, we're working right now in our Altira Lounge, which is upstairs on the sixth floor, which is a really cool outdoor area, primarily bar, but we also have a menu there with 10 items.
That's the pool area, right?
Yeah, that's the pool area.
Pretty spot too.
Yeah, it's really, you need to get that kind of just whole kind of shot of downtown Orlando and the whole, you know.
Are you allowed to tease what those menu items might be or no? If it's a no, I'm not going to put, I'm not going to press.
Well, it's kind of, a lot of different players involved in actually making a menu. It's not always just say one individual, but we're doing a lot of, we're trying to get some Creekstone, beef brisket in there, doing a quesadilla. We're looking to fold in, I'm going to say the word crab dip, it doesn't always say, hey, crab dip, right? But we do get this beautiful, crab and fresh, every Sunday brunch. So then we make crab dip for that as well. So it's just really, giving with the people what they want.
Now, speaking of give with the people they want, if you need me, I'm available to help you figure out the menu stuff,
Actually, he's holding back. He wants to be the official taster.
Yes.
We are doing a tasting for that menu in about 2 weeks.
So right. I'm available. Okay. Well, actually, you're not. 2 weeks? Probably not.
No, you're not.
So we're
I'm going to already tell you that right now. Yeah, you're not.
I'm not. So we've got the World Food Championship. in Dallas coming up.
Yep.
Yeah. And I was really blessed and fortunate to be asked to be a master judge.
Yeah, you mentioned it. That's so cool.
It is. I am so excited.
See all this hard work?
See, he just eats it and then you can judge.
See, kids, if you want to achieve something.
You can be a server and just eat food and then judge.
Wow. All right, so, listen, I did 10 years. Like, it's almost like it's a prison sentence. I did 10 years.
You judges.
In food service. Okay? Oh, I did 10 years
in restaurants. No, I'm just kidding. I believe you.
I put my time in, okay? I put in my time, and God knows my hands hurt, too. Yeah. I didn't come away unscathed, all right?
Oh, God.
Yeah. Wow. Man, you guys are very hurtful. I gotta tell you.
No, not hurtful. Truthful.
Well,
hashtag truth.
Okay. What am I ordering? When I really want to listen. I am excited about the Granbo.
Granbo.
Here's the thing about the Granbo. When you're developing, like you're building this menu, you're about to do the test runs and stuff. Mm-hmm. What are you looking for to do? Describe what the process is when you're with the audience.
Yeah, you know, it's a huge combination of even like assessing the skill set of your team. You always have to keep that in mind. What can they actually obtain or what can they do? Knowing your demographic. You know, when I opened up a breakfast and lunch place years ago, I didn't want to put French fries on the menu. So 3 days later, I had French fries on the menu. So team, demographics, you know, products, what's available, what can I do? I mean, everything from flatware to plates to the flow of food, how it's coming off the line, how it's making its way into the dining room. I mean, there's a lot to really think about when writing a menu. I mean, hence why we're taught, even when designing a restaurant, menu is really the first thing that we should think about, because the menu dictates how many fryers you need in the kitchen, how many eyes on the range. And so there's a lot of things.
Which trickles into decorum and, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, look at when a chef designs a restaurant from scratch. I mean, they're thinking about the colors in the dining room. I mean, it's insane that everything that you have to go through. So, but I call it fan favorites. I always say you have to give the fan favorites. You have to have the strip. You have to have the ribeye. You have to have the cuts of beef. You have to have, you know, the couple chicken dishes for our wives. You have to have, you know, the seafood dishes for all the seafood lovers, of course. So,
I agree. And I think that if you're listening, get there. Jeffrey.
Sir.
All right.
We got the Tomahawk experience, big 50-ounce. You know,
I know. I saw the picture of that. By the way, that looks serious.
Completely bone, like
Salt Bay style. I know we don't want to say that name.
Do you have the logo, like, put
on, yeah, like, no, and we're actually looking at, you know, getting cutting boards with the logo. Everybody's doing, you know, that kind of started more in the country club world years ago, branding everything.
Yeah. Actually, I've got a guy, Chris Steveley, out of Tennessee. I think he's out of, he does woodwork and custom. Right. And he's got gorgeous stuff.
There you go.
And he's an ex-chef too. That's what I love about him. Better than, sense. No offense, better than that B-R-O cutting board one.
Gotcha.
So he's a small guy. He does great stuff with his abilities with wood.
Bro, listen to me. So let's talk food safety.
Not the normal food safety.
Not normal food safety. Yeah, wash your hands, people. No, this is different. Jeff.
Or having a towel on your shoulder.
CDC estimates that 48 million people get sick, 128,000 are hospitalized, and 3,000 die from foodborne diseases each year in the U.S., What say you?
I, you know, it starts, you know, we look at everything in the industry, and when Chef and I were talking in the green room, you know, we talk about food safety and when the health inspector comes in. It doesn't start there. The health inspection starts in the field.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things when I was growing up in the industry itself was always buy from a reputable, an account person, right? And the reason being is because it goes about traceability and accountability. When I worked for the large broadliner, they can tell you what field was picked, what time, and who actually picked it. And that's how far back the traceability goes back when you're with a reputable company, and that's how important it is. But people don't realize that are not in the industry for themselves is that there are more laws on the books for people in the restaurant industry than there are for doctors. Mm. And a lot of people question that, like, why is that? Mm. Well, we can kill as many people in masses because we do something wrong, whether it be, and there's a big thing about, I had food poisoning. Well, food poisoning is an actual chemical that has been introduced to the food. So that's like bleach or ammonia. That's food poisoning. Foodborne illness is actually caused by Salmonella, E. coli, Listeria. And we all know these names because look in our news. Like just recently, we had 15,000 pounds of food that was dumped. We had 10,000 pounds, almost 10,500 pounds of food dumped from Diego Foods. And everybody's like, well, at least they caught it and they dumped it. The problem is, what about the natural resources and the energy and all the other stuff that it took to make that food and bring it to the market, and let alone all that other stuff, and how the FDA and the USDA work together, which they don't, and how they have to go about finding and holding these people accountable. And I think that's the biggest problem we have is when the consumers don't realize they have that much power. Chefs actually lead the consumers. We can give them what they want. I mean, look at the guy with the cronut. Everybody wanted a cronut for so many years. You could have the next person to be doing something. And why are we not on a bandwagon about food safety?
I don't know. I mean, last January,
we talked about it on one of the podcasts.
I was in a hotel in Georgia, and really nice place, you know, really,
Georgia revenge instead of Montezuma's revenge.
A little bit, it was a little dated, but it was a really nice property. And, we got there late, and long story short, when I walked in to the front desk, which was maybe, I don't know, 80 yards away, right? The dining room from the front desk, like, you know, you walk in, there's your check-in, and to the left is, you know, you can see the dining room. There were fruit flies at the front desk. Yeah. And I knew, but I was like, man, this is something I noticed it. I'm involved in this, right? So we went to the dining room, ordered. Yeah, there were fruit flies. And what am I going to say? I thought I had a heart attack because I woke up in the middle of the night, like maybe 1 a.m. And I ended up, it was horrible. I ended up passing out. Like it was bad. I have a scar on my knee. I'll show you. Like it was horrible, horrible, horrible. Definitely a foodborne thing.
Wow.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit rackporcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
And yeah, and what's the scariest part of it is it's not somebody of your age. It's about the people that are younger.
Yeah.
There's a mother that lost her son to salmonella poisoning, and they wanted to get this bill enacted. And unfortunately, all the lobbyists that are in Washington are kind of shushing that bill so they don't have to do certain things. So if you look and compare what happened back in the 90s with the tobacco industry, it's happening now in the food industry.
Yeah.
There are some corporations out there, not all, there are some corporations out there that are more for the profitability and they don't care about how many lives they, you know, destroy.
Yeah.
Peanut farmer, we were talking about the one that did all the processing for all those different foods. He's in jail for 25 years because he knowingly poisoned humans.
Yeah, people, that's going to happen. Okay, so there's a difference between actively knowing that you've hurt people and worse,
right?
Than hey, there's an accident that occurred. You know, obviously there's insurance for these things. Let's you know, let's make the fix and we have to just all move on. There's differences between that, and I think typically the larger the corporation is, the less, you know, the more that profitability matters versus, right? Yeah. So, I mean,
you hope they don't cut corners as large as they are.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
you hope that the smaller people don't, you know, the smaller operations don't cut corners either. And you never know because when you can't pay your mortgage, but you're trying to, you know, do your thing and do your business, people get put in precarious positions and sometimes they make the wrong choice. you know, but usually what happens, it ends up getting, comes out in the wash, and people get, they go to jail, they get fined, whatever happens.
Yeah.
And I think they should do that with the truth in menu too, as far as the health inspectors are concerned. You know, we talked about being local, and, you know, Keith Saracen wrote that Farm to Fable. You know, when we're talking about if you buy something locally and you put it on your menu, well, then I think the health inspector should have that right. Number one, the accountability and the traceability for that product. But number two, if you put local and you're getting it from California, how local is that?
No.
So, obviously, if you're not in California.
Right. If you're here in Orlando.
Yeah.
So that's to me, that's mind-boggling that we're doing stuff like that. I mean, like when you're developing and you're meeting your vendors, do you ask them what kind of insurance do you carry?
No, not normally.
So when you, when you're talking about larger properties, you know, people who are part of Avendra or some other large program or Cisco or one of the big broadliners, those vendors, you know, when you're talking about a multi-billion dollar distributor, they have, their safety checks are ridiculous. What they have to do in order to open a warehouse and you know, have and do perform and do be in business.
There's that famous acronym, HACCP.
HACCP is nothing compared to what these guys have to do.
Well, they still have to do HACCP though.
No, HACCP is like the basic of the basic. But then there's another four levels up, and each level you go, it's another, you know, depending on the size of your building, it's another $100,000 that you got to throw into your building, or $500,000 you got to throw into your building, or $1 million you got to throw into your building in order to hit to have the right facilities in order to reach these plateaus. But, you know, again, they're multi-billion dollar organizations. They, you know, it's part of the,
what about the farmers? How much insurance the farmers have to have?
Yeah.
And how much the water?
But it trickles backwards too. So like if you're, once you hit a certain level in distributorship, you can no longer, when you're small, you can find the guy with the small truck who's selling apples, right? And you buy the apples from him cheap. It's good, you know, whatever. You can eyeball it, see it's good, right? You get a little bit bigger, and a little bit bigger. All of a sudden, you can't buy from that guy anymore, because you have to buy from a farm that shows their traceability, and they have to have all their protocols in place and everything. So you're forced in a good way. It's not a bad force. It's a good. You're forced into dealing with higher level farms who do the right work, and all of it is traceability, and all of it is insurance, and everything is, you know, there's some safety measures there, because at the end, what ends up happening is guest X gets sick. What do? Their attorneys are going to go all the way back as far as they can. And so if I'm the distributor and all I did was I brought product in that, you know, you do spot checks, you can only spot check so much, right? So what ends up happening is if something happens, if a load comes in and somewhere on that pallet is something that gets somebody sick, that's horrible. But you defer to your farm who has their protocols and insurance, takes us out of the
loop,
of the loop of it. And it goes, you know, so it there's like checkpoints down.
Yeah.
I think one of the other problem or the other facet that about food safety is years ago when Jack in the Box had the E. coli outbreak, and then it was beef, and then they kind of rectified it. For the most part, they've rectified it. Then we started seeing it in the produce. Like, you know, great example, we talked about Chipotle, company that bounced back because they had accountability and traceability. They knew exactly where it was coming from. It was, one was romaine, one was scallions and something else. I can't remember the last one. But here's the thing that's so different. You can take a piece of meat that might be tainted with E. coli and cook it to a certain temperature.
Scallions. Yeah.
And it was scallions. I said scallions and romaine. Yeah. There was another one. I think it might have been tomatoes.
But you're not cooking the lettuce.
Exactly. So, you know, some of these programs I was watching, Food Inc. and Food Chains. So Food Inc. is one that was really dealing with food safety. One of the things, they had brought this lawyer who actually started with Jack in the Box and went after them and found the emails and so on and so forth. And they brought him into a grocery store, and they walked around. He goes, well, what wouldn't you eat? He goes, anything in this place right now. And he's like, well, why? He goes, because you can't chemically kill the E. coli, the salmonella, the listeria, because you're washing, even pre-wash doesn't do anything. And I was like, the light bulb went off in my head. And I'm like, oh my God, how right is he? And then they show you in this movie where not everybody's doing this. There are some companies that are actually growing greens, like as in salad greens, next to a feedlot. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but where does a feedlot get, when the animals go to the bathroom, they're not going into a porta toilet. They're going right there on the ground. So that rainwater is going off.
It's runoff, yeah.
So there's a lot of things that you just sit there and go, well, that's kind of stupid. Why are they doing that? That's the question we need to be asking as consumers. Why is this happening?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think that, you know, we have a thread in this program, and it has to do with, you know, farmers, you know, your local farmers and your chefs, mm-hmm. you know, the restaurants, the hotels, the chefs from a community that are, you know, usually within an hour from farms.
Yeah.
And how everyone should kind of know your farmers. And if you know, if there's a push to know who your farmers are, then there's going to be a push for your chefs to know who their local farmers are, to support them. But the more eyeballs there are on this, it's going to raise the bar higher. And you know, ultimately what ends up happening is you're going to get a cleaner, safer, better product all the way around. Because if it's coming out of the ground and taken care of properly and all the protocols are met and whatnot, when that product makes it into the kitchen to be prepared for you to eat, well, guess what? Your experience is going to be that much better.
Well, think about it. We talked about it on Patrick's podcast when he came in. We talked about the green and gassing the tomatoes.
Yep, yep.
If they're local, guess what? You're going to get a really full-flavored, incredible tomato.
Yeah, you know, it shows how much I know, because recently, touring a produce plant, I didn't realize how green they were when they came in, right? So, and then they're showing me how they gas them, and that really kind of blew my mind. I did not comprehend that that's how that works.
I absolutely can't stand gas tomatoes.
I feel like it's the, you know, when you get the McDonald's tomato, it's like white in the center, and it's got the green root in it. That's what it reminds me of.
That's gas.
We call them pinkies.
Yeah.
Like pink. They're pink color, pinkies.
And, you know, we do all these great things to speed the process up to get the products there so there's no dents and, you know, spoilages and so on and so forth. But yet in the world, the United States, as first world nation that we are, we're number 9 in food safety.
Yeah.
And that's not just in restaurants. That's actual how.
I bet you we're number 1 in fines. What do you want to bet?
What, health department fines?
Yeah, what do you want to bet?
But hey, as we talk on this topic, what it does remind me of, and this is just my take on it, and there's no statistical information I can give you. It's just a vibe.
Lies.
A vibe that I've told people this for years. It's my BS vibe, whatever. I believe in the 70s and, you know, even the 60s, it was this whole, the housewife doesn't have time anymore processing foods. They invented the little tables, right, for the microwave.
Oh, my God.
And then
Swanson's Hungry Man.
But I think there was a lot of cloud around our food then, of what was going on with our food, and then more processing in 80s and 90s. And now with technology and internet and interwebs and all that, there's accountability, I think.
You're right. But I have to tell you, I grew up. I think
we're getting aware of it.
As the older folks in my family.
Watch it. Oh, your family. Sorry.
Yeah. In my family, the older folks sitting across from me right now, Jeffrey Hubel. As the older generations in my family started to kind of pass on, mm-hmm. You know, obviously you lose a lot of the
traditions
and whatnot, and the freshness and the cooking and whatever. But I was fortunate to get a lot of that. Like everything was always fresh and made from scratch.
That's good,
But there was a point towards the, you know, late 80s, early 90s when it was like Swedish meatballs, you know.
IKEA.
It starts turning.
IKEA. No. I'm talking about from like the grocery store. I forget the brand. Might have been Swanson's. I don't know. But it was like Swedish meatballs. And they were, like, I still would eat the hell out of that. Like,
right.
100%.
Oh, yeah, they're good.
But they're probably, it's probably, it would probably happen? If my carcass was just there, it would not
be preserved.
Yes, it wouldn't decompose.
You know what I mean? Well, it's honest to God. I was reading a report not too long ago that our corpses are not deteriorating so fast, and it's
because of preservatives.
Wow,
microplastics, right? All that good stuff.
Well, not just the microplastics. You got to look at.
Sorry,
you know,
stop it.
I was reading a box of like a Betty Crocker, and you know, my wife's like, "Well, there's not that many chemicals in there," and I'm like, "Really? Triglycerides and monoglycerides." I'm like, every single other word.
Well, we say that now. Chemical. Not so. There's not as many,
right?
Yeah.
I think, you know, back in the 50s when they developed Wonder Bread, that's where it really started to go downhill. Yeah,
exactly. That's what I'm saying. Mass
production.
High fructose corn syrup instead of sugar, you know.
Well, and again, you got to look at the supermarket. Look when you look at the cereal aisle in itself, I know we're going to talk about the TikToker that you mentioned last time, and he's going to come on. There's like four major food groups, companies. You look at beef right now, for instance. Tyson doesn't want to do chicken anymore. They're moving out of chicken and going more beef. You have IBP, Swift, Smithfield for pork. Am I missing anyone? Because I can't think of anyone.
Well, those are the big, the big daddies.
That's what I'm talking about. So what's happening? Look, this is a point, just happened. Cisco, what did they just buy recently? Like as in the last 2 days?
Edward Don, right?
Thank you.
So now I'm like, I'll shut up.
That's the thing. Like when I worked for the major broadliner I worked with, I remember when they, remember to this day, December 13th, they made the announcement Cisco was going to acquire US Foods.
Yeah. It's the movie WALL-E, right? You remember it was like the big brand, like Walmart takes, buys everything. That's what we're eventually going to turn into.
And no, we're not
flying around.
We
space.
Are turning into that. And that's the problem. We're not getting into this where we have these little niches of beautiful products and, you know, the food safety becomes a concern too.
Yeah.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
What was the movie that had Costco in it? And
it was
The Alien movie.
No.
Ben Stiller.
Gatorade. Oh God!
Gatorade.
It was a comedy.
Yeah,
Jennifer Aniston was in that.
Oh, the new guy, the new employee.
Yeah.
What's that called? Employee of the month.
No, yeah, man.
It was. Yeah, I think it was employee of the month.
No,
but that's what he was going for.
It was a Costco.
You know, talking
so about Ryan Reynolds.
No, not Ryan Reynolds. The wannabe Ryan Reynolds.
Or is it Dan? Cook.
You got it. Dane Cook.
Dane Cook.
Yeah.
It was Dane Cook. Jennifer Aniston, I thought, might have been in it.
Had Andy Dick in it.
No, you're talking about, like the restaurant movie.
Oh, no. That's called...
you said Costco.
Waiting,
yeah.
Waiting is the one. That's the other one.
No, this is like... I can't... It's right here, and I can't think of what it is.
Like,
but it was like
a ploy of the month.
Gatorade, Plants Wanted or something like that. Oh, Electrolytes. Oh,
Idiocracy.
Idiocracy.
Greatest movie of all time. Jesus.
I didn't... Thank you. I love it. Different one.
I just want everybody who's listening right now, I want to thank Chef Jason for...
Idiocracy.
Because I would have been sitting here... stumbling in my mind trying to figure out.
But you said Costco. You led with Costco.
There was a Costco in it. They were looking for the time machine. Remember, he was trying to go back in time.
Everything was bought at Costco.
Everything. Right? Cars, everything.
Right. But electrolyte, it was like a failing civilization because...
they put it on the plants.
Yeah, because they were putting electrolytes on the plants because that's what plants crave. And at the end of the day, it was killing everything. And it was...
but that's how bad they got. And Luke Wilson's character was like, put water on the plants. And they're like, water from the toilet?
Water. Anyway, we're living that life right now.
It's scary.
We're there. True. This is like, people, go watch that movie. If you haven't seen it, you have to. Yes. Idiocracy.
And that's what's crazy to me, that we have big farming, but when we're driving down, we see these huge farms.
How? What kind?
Huge.
Huge.
Okay. How many bins do you have out back in your house, John? Two, right? And you grow plants. I mean, obviously food, right? There's not much room you need to do. He's silent, Bob.
Silent John over here.
He's shaking his head.
The nods.
We got to get him an overcoat.
And the hat backwards. Yeah. But that's the thing that people think, and they think, oh, I need massive amounts of land to do it. And unless you're doing like a Napa cabbage, like Amy Yee's family does, which you need one seed plants for one. By the way, when you plant a seed, doesn't mean that's going to generate food, correct?
Uh-huh.
So you have to build, you know, do as many as you think you're going to do so that hopefully you get product.
We are, hold on a minute. It is 1:38 PM on a Thursday. We are 997,528 downloads from October of 2022 to October of 2023. I think we're going to be hitting a million this month. Probably by tomorrow.
Nice. Wait, we were 99,100 this morning when we talked. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's
nice. Congratulations.
Hasn't happened, but like it's right there, man.
I thought I was so hoping we'd hit a million.
For the show.
To make the announcement.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but what's the other announcement?
Oh, we were number one again. We hit number one again.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you. All of you.
Everybody.
You downloading.
You monsters. Downloading sons of bitches. Yeah, no, it's awesome. Seriously, this is the coolest thing ever. Because normally, the people who are in the top 10 on these things, even 20, 50, 100, they're all like brand name people. You know, like they're the NPR folks and the New York Times this and, you know, the 10, you know, best-selling cookbooks that and like all these like big name people. And then there's like us.
Yeah, you know? But you guys are legit, though. The three of you make this happen, you know?
This is one of the coolest things. So, like, remember, Casey Kasem.
Oh,
right?
My God.
Right? But it's the billboard, like your top, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now, obviously, this isn't the same as, you know, being in the number one song in the country because those people are making millions of bucks. And then, you know, then there's us, right? But the truth is, in this particular field, you hit number one in your category. That's really like a big freaking deal.
What do we mean, arts? This is really cool he's about to say.
Yeah, so let me touch on that. Our main category, when John told me to wait.
He wants to film.
He didn't say anything. All right, so he's fine.
For prosperity's sake.
Yes. Our main category is the arts, okay? We're actually, today, number 14 in the arts category.
I am an artist. We are artists.
Right. Okay. Right. Food.
Hashtag real.
Is a subcategory of the arts category.
Who's number one in arts?
Paul McCartney.
You know that guy? Sir.
Who?
Sir, yes. Paul.
The guy from back then?
Right.
Great guy, not knocking Paul.
Sir
Paul McCartney. But hold on. To put this into perspective, the Walk and Talk podcast is in the same breath, okay, as Paul McCartney. Are you crazy? Yeah. I can't wrap my brain around this.
Neither can I.
I can't.
Carl's wearing a t-shirt right now, by the way.
So I am wearing I don't know what that means.
Well, but Paul was always dressed up at least, right?
Well, he's Sir.
Sir Paul.
Yeah, I mean.
Carl would have to attain Sir.
I'm wearing a dish rag over here, literally, right? So, but it's the truth. How cool is that?
That's amazing.
Right? So, listen, we're not in some kind of like crazy status where we're number one or top, you know, even 200 and like the main, like, hey, who's the number one podcast? Like, we're nothing to them. But in our categories, man, we're really kicking some butt.
Yeah.
You know, and really thank you everybody for being part of this in whatever capacity that you are. Thank you kindly, like sincerely.
I mean, it is a true testament to what, you know, how it goes and all the different text messages and emails and, you know, the messaging, hey, what's going to be in the topic? What are you doing this week? And and then you hear about, for some reason, I got more blow up last week, and maybe we'll do with you, Chef, but with Jay on, I got, this was the best one. And my response was, why?
Yeah, why?
Yeah.
And they were like, just the chemistry between you guys, the topic you guys chose to talk about was so spot on. You guys bring it to light. You had humor to it. And I'm like, well, we'll try to replicate that. And that's you know, great feedback. Thank you so much, Mom. No kidding.
I mean, do you get ideas from your listeners? Have they given you
any? Yeah, I mean, we would love to, but there's... So we love a little more interaction.
We're in the process. So the thing about social media, and this is the funky thing about it, and I can apply this to myself because I am a huge consumer of social media, right? By the nature of this, even I'm just a huge. So I have historically watched, listened, read, and never liked, commented, shared, followed, none of that. That's never been in my, you know, repertoire of things to do. Never part of my process. The vast majority, like our YouTube channel, right, where we're doing restaurant recipes and the Dirty Dash, and you know, we have these all culinary badass shows that we put out that are getting 5,000, 30,000, 50,000 views at a time. We don't have a lot of interaction, which really pisses me off because I don't understand it. I do though, because that was me. Now I just, you know, if I get caught reading, or if I get caught into a video, or I'm listening to, I find myself listening to a podcast, I will go out of my way, even if I don't particularly care for the host or what they're saying. But if it grabbed me in a way where I felt compelled to listen, I still give them something, because now I know what it's like, you know, to do the work. Like, look at all the, like, there's so much work that goes involved, that get, that's involved in doing this, and money. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Time.
So hold on, man. 'Cause now don't you dare, because the reality is, you see all this stuff. This has been a 3.5 year.
I got you.
Yeah.
That's not why we're laughing.
Hey, I remember you posted photos of these microphones. You were proud of them, right?
Oh yeah.
I remember that. That was like, yeah. I've watched your process. You know, yeah. You guys have gone through it.
You've been following from the rip.
I've been that creeper.
Yeah. 100%. When we went to,
well, I opened the door. You guys didn't know this. I opened the door up because, yeah, I know who you are.
Well, it's funny.
It's still strange to me.
I drive by your house. Yeah, was,
he's been here before. I know where I was. I know where I was going. No, when we met at a property a while ago, a different property, and I met him like after meeting, you know, the exec and another high. Anyway, when he came over, he was like, "Oh, hey, man, yeah, I follow, I listen, I watch this." I was like, "Okay," because I did. I feel like he knows what my room looks like. You know what I mean? Like, but no, I'm kidding, sort of. No. Anyway, no, but yeah, but here we are. And it's a testament to what we're doing that this cat, who is high end,
yeah,
you know, that we're able to work together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but back to what I was saying earlier about what you're doing for the industry, you know, like bringing the idea of Michelin and, like, you know, ACF chefs together, because there is a line sometimes between
Beard.
That.
Don't forget about James Beard.
You know, you got like a couple
of them coming on.
Hipster chefs, I always say, with the big gauges in their ears. And you got the hipster chef generation. You got like the kind of the mom, like the middle aged chef generation, I'll say. And you got the older generation. And I think it's just kind of blurring those lines and bringing everybody together.
You know, it's funny that you brought that up, because that's exactly where I want to be. I do want to take, you know, the old school and the new school.
Yeah.
And, you know, us Gen Xers are kind of now in that middle stage, actually even getting up there now. But I want to like smash everybody together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the reality is, if you work in a line, whether it's a banquet, you know, whether you're doing, you know, giant banquets at a hotel, or you're, you know, if you got 300 covers at a restaurant, dude, it's all the same work.
Yep.
It's you're feeding guests and guests get ornery. You know, it's not easy to feed people.
Safely
feeding guests. Yes, safely, of course. Man. And it's hard to feed people because I love people. People are awesome, but in another breath, people suck. It's like, you know, which one is which? Yeah. You know what I mean? Because listen, when you're sick, you're an a-hole. When you're hungry, you're an a-hole. Happens to all, myself included. It happens to everybody, right? So what do? We in the service industry have to deal with the hungry people.
Yeah.
I worked for 5 years while I was still in restaurants. I worked 5 years in a hospital, and I was doing ER registration. And I was also a sleep study technician, strangely. Okay. And when I was doing ER registration, dude, let me tell you something. Hurt people and people who are under duress are 30, 50 times worse than somebody who's hungry and got the wrong temperature, steak. So
you met my family?
Yeah. So when you look at those two groups of individuals, it's hard to please them.
Yeah.
Right? So our segment in food, really difficult. But we make it happen.
I think anytime.
And we keep coming back for more.
my favorite, and I would always ask when I would get a new job, and I would be like, you guys open Thanksgiving? They're like, no. I'm like, okay, I'll take the job. Thanksgiving and Christmas, to me, worst time in the industry to be a chef, because you get all those, my stuffing's better. Well, then stay home and make it yourself.
I know. But, you know, you make so much money, though. Is it like front of the house?
Yeah, that's great, but not for the back of the house.
How many years, John, like all of us here.
Yeah.
I mean, I had, I don't know, 10 years. I didn't, or more really.
Yeah.
That, I worked every holiday.
Yeah.
You know, family's like, oh, when are you going to, what time are you getting out? I don't know when I'm getting out. I'll try to get there as soon as I can. Yeah. Well, what do you mean?
What do you mean? What do I mean? You know what I do? Like, the place doesn't close until, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning.
I worked at Shenanigans. I worked from 5 o'clock in the afternoon to 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thursday, Friday. No, it was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but Saturday.
That
place.
No, that was in Waiting, the movie Waiting. Right?
No,
Bennigan's.
Oh, I thought it was Shenanigans.
Well, no, the place was called Shenanigans.
No, time out. Wait a minute. Bennigan's was what. You know,
that was depicted of.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
In the movie.
Yeah.
Shenanigans
was actually the name of the Pat Utter's restaurant called Shenanigans. It was a sports bar.
That place was debaucherous.
Was it?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Yeah. What happened there stayed there.
Yeah. Because I had a little stint at Bennigan's. And I got to tell you, that was a wild, wild place. But
Monte Cristo.
Yeah. Shut up. So. When you would leave Bennigan's at 12:30, we would go to Shenanigans. And that's where things started to get illicit. It was really bad. And then after Shenanigans.
What about Flanagan's?
You head over. No.
No. You went over to. Yeah.
Capone, Flicker Like Capone over in Hollywood. And that's where it really got crazy. That's where people would get killed in the front. Like, that was like nuts. I remember the first time. It was maybe 1990. We started going to
Capone's,
and I remember we got there, it was like late or whatever, you know, whatever time in the morning it was. And there was some dude.
We used to go to Lester's too.
Yeah. But Lester's, you didn't get like stabbed.
No, you didn't get stabbed. You got breakfast.
Right. This was after.
It's
after
7 in the morning.
Yeah. After you're cleaning your face from the fight. But I remember there was this cat. He was, there was a big dude and a little dude, and the little dude was like on his hands and knees in the parking lot. Big buddy had these big boots. This guy was just nailing this cat in the face over and over. And I'm just like, oh man, I want to go in here. Like, this is my, I found my home. Yeah. So that was where you go after Shenanigans.
Yeah. Shenanigans was, yeah.
But then you end up at Waffle House eventually, right? Or Dennis.
For another fight.
Well, it depends what kind of person you were. If you had any sort of like structure, you would end up at Lester's.
At Lester's, gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. Waffle, especially Lester's.
If you're ending up at any of those, at Denny's or Waffle, you're looking for like...
No Waffle trouble. House?
Yeah.
You're looking for a problem.
It's different trouble, man.
Yeah. No, 100% different.
Yeah. Because that part of Hollywood was rough back then.
Oh, yeah.
And probably still is.
I don't think so. I don't think so. All right, so I want to make an announcement here. As we wrap up, so this is for Big Pooch Rivera. You know, we've been talking about this cat now for about 2 months.
Don't we say his name every single podcast?
Yes, but there's a reason.
I love the guy.
He's coming on board with us. We're going to give him a podcast. His podcast is going to be now. Get this. Old time New Orleans food podcast. He's going to get into the history of the food culture in New Orleans.
Nice.
Italian, French, African American, that whole backstories and all that stuff. Stay tuned. Check it out. The chef, Jason F. Lynn, thank you for being on the program. Starship over there.
Thank you.
Awesome. Silent John. Silent John.
I like Silent John the best, I think.
I think I do, too. I think we're going to get him a shirt and everything, the hats. We're going to sell them. It's going to be like we're going to make $1 million. We are, and bless everybody, we
God bless.
Are out.
Out.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.